vince la 14ª tappa del Giro d'Italia un corridore colombiano per Orica Grinegia. Gli applausi sono tutti per Juan Esteban Chaves. Signore e signori, è arrivato il momento della vestizione della maglia rossa. Il leader della classifica generale arriva dall'Olanda, difende i colori di Lotto NL Jumbo. Applausi per Steven Kruijswijk.
Where are you from?
We're Dutch. We love Steven Kruijswijk. He's gonna win the GC. He's gonna win it.
Are you his fan club?
We're great fans of Steven Kruijswijk. We're the biggest fans. 7 days we follow the Giro. Every day.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney.
Hello, Lionel. Is this the Gruppetto coming in?
It is the Gruppetto. 31 minutes, 15 seconds since the stage winner Esteban Chaves arrived in Corvara, and now this is a large group of riders who've had a very hard day in the saddles. Over 6.5 hours they've been out there.
I can see one of the bus drivers, Manuel Quinciato, anyway, so I think it is the Gruppetto.
Well, Daniel, should we go and see if we can catch up with one of the riders, find out how their day has been?
Well, a day to celebrate for you, but I imagine you've had a very different day from your team leader, Steven Kruijswijk.
Yeah, really well, but it's amazing, really incredible what he did today. And for us, the last 10K suffering was a lot less.
And when and how did you get the news that Steven was in pink?
On the top of the last ride, we heard it in the radio. So,
we have to celebrate tonight, eh?
Yeah, but you've got a busy week ahead of you now. No messing around in the Gruppetto now. You're going to have a very, very busy and tiring last week.
It will be. That's good we saved legs today, eh?
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Corvara.
Cozze ci delle cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
So that was us on the finish line in Corvara a little bit earlier this afternoon. We heard Esteban Chaves, the stage winner, being announced to the crowd, and then Steven Kruijswijk being announced to the crowd, a new pink jersey, and the Steven Kruijswijk fans in very good voice. And then we heard from one of his Dutch Lotto NL teammates, Bram Tankink, who came over the line in what we thought was the Gruppetto, Daniel, but actually there was another group 13 minutes after them. So they were out on the road. The last men on the road were out there for 6 hours 50 minutes. It's been a long, tough, but beautiful day on the Giro, hasn't it?
It has. And Bram Tankink, one of the great characters of professional cycling, man who believes that all cows are reincarnated former professional cyclists, of course.
We should play the cowbells here, shouldn't we?
Oh, should we play the cowbells?
Yeah. The traditional sound of the Dolomites there, Daniel. Cowbells, is that right?
It is. As you know, Lionel, I'm very fond of this part of the world. The Dolomites, we relocated them finally. And we've spent most of the last 3 weeks, well, 2 weeks, talking about where they are and how exactly to access them. But we really, well, our breath was taken away, wasn't it, by the scene that greeted us when we arrived here in Corvara. Just an extraordinarily beautiful stage and an extraordinarily well-planned stage. I think the course was absolutely superb. The final climb, the Muro del Gatto, the small rise there, towards the end was a brilliant sting in the tail, and it was just a fantastic, breathtaking day.
It was, and you didn't even get fed up with my game of Is That a Dolomite, which we've been playing for a few days in the car. I've been pointing out of the window like a child on a family holiday. Is that a Dolomite, Daniel? But anyway, let's try and recap what was a real humdinger of a stage. There was so much going on that if the tail of the tapper was going to reflect everything that happened on the road, today, we'd need a podcast all of its own, and we don't want that, so I'll keep it to the main events. It was stage 14 from Alpago to Corvara, 210 kilometres in the Dolomites, six climbs, five of them over 2,000 metres high, with a total of 5,000 metres altitude gain, and more than six, and in some cases, almost 7 hours in the saddle for the riders. The highlights then, Ruben Plaza of Orica Green Edge was first to the top of the Paso Gardena, the third climb of the day, and also first to the top of the Paso Campolongo, the fourth climb of the day. There'd been a big break early on, lots of riders all over the place. On the Paso Giao, Plaza was caught and dropped by Darwin Atapuma of BMC and Konstantin Siutsu of Dimension Data. By this point, the main group of favourites had been reduced to a core of the GC contenders, really the only men in with a chance of winning this race. The pink jersey Andre Amador was dropped but fought back on the descent. On the last of the big climbs, the Paso Valparola, Atapuma went clear on his own at the front. At the bottom of that climb, Stephen Kruiswijk attacked. He was joined by Esteban Chavez. Nibali couldn't quite follow. Amador was dropped. Valverde couldn't respond either. And on the approach to Corvara, Atapuma was still leading, but Kruiswijk and Chavez and Georg Priedler, another survivor from the early break, were closing in fast. There was heartbreak for the Colombian Atapuma, very close to the line when he was caught. But another Colombian, Esteban Chavez, won the sprint. And Kruiswijk is the second Dutchman in pink in this race. The damage behind was significant, though. Nibali lost 37 seconds. Zakarin and Michael lost 2:29. Uran lost 2:50. Valverde and Fuglsang 3 minutes. And Amador 3:52. Really devastation all across the road. So the pink jersey, Lotto Jumbo's Stephen Kruiswijk. Red is Giacomo Nizzolo. Blue, Damiano Cunego. And white, Bob Jungels. Phew. Hope I didn't miss anything there.
We always miss something, don't we, Lionel?
We're joined this evening by Dutch journalist Dan Hakkenberg of Algemeen Dagblad. Dan, turning into a busy Giro d'Italia for you. Tom Dumoulin was in pink for 6 days, and now another Dutchman is in the pink jersey.
Yeah, and if you put it like this, I'm not quite so sure that he will lose it tomorrow already. So actually, I think he will be in pink on the rest day as well. Because of his time trial, he already said to me right now, the time Nibali has in disadvantage, he has to make up. And yeah, it's up to him, you know. And he showed today that uphill, no one is better than Steven Kruiswijk at the moment.
Well, he leads Nibali by 41 seconds. Tomorrow's individual uphill time trial is 10.8 kilometres. So he would have to have a really bad day to lose the pink jersey. But Daniel, today you were really surprised that Kruiswijk attacked and took the initiative.
Well, yeah, maybe Dan can set us right on this, but you know, you look at Kruiswijk and you look at his career to date, and I think this is his sixth Giro d'Italia, but he's never really been close to the podium in a Grand Tour, and you would almost imagine that he'd be pleased, delighted to be where he was before today's stage. And you look at the climbs to come and the Alps to come and the Agnello or the Bonnet, huge climbs, some of the biggest climbs in Europe, and I would imagine that he would be content to follow the wheels until the last 2 days, really, and then perhaps assess things and decide whether he wanted to try to attack Nibali and Valverde. And I was both impressed and kind of surprised that he took the initiative so early in the race. I know we're in the at the end of the second week, but it is still quite early in the context of the mountains.
He was aiming for this opportunity. He already told a couple of times that if the moment is there, he will do. And yesterday, the stage was just not a Steven Kruiswijk stage. It was too much turning. The climbs were too steep. But he already said afterwards, if there's an opportunity, then we take it. And he said, actually yesterday, after yesterday's stage, he said, I might take it on the last weekend. But he felt so good. And he's in a good form, like 2 weeks already. So actually, this was the perfect moment, the perfect stage for him, he said.
Yeah, I mean, this is my doubt as well about Kruiswijk, where exactly on his form curve he is, because he needs to be at his very, very best over the next few days. And it looked to me as though he was having one of those days that almost once in a career days. It was he couldn't have been in better form today. And you know, he went to Tenerife before the Giro. I think he spent, it was about 18-19 days, and I know from his Strava account that he did one day when he climbed about 5,000 metres, which was almost the equivalent of today's stage. And I just wonder whether he has any doubts, any fears about starting to fall off that form curve slightly on the last couple of days.
Well, let me get on this point. If you look at all his Grand Tours and, for example, all his Giros, he never had a bad third week, actually. On his first Giro, it was a Neo Pro in 2010, he had already a perfect third week. If you look at last year, he was there in the third week as well. He was actually one of the best. He only got beaten by Landa. And as we all know, he's out. He was beaten by Contador. And as we know, he's not here. Mm. So I think for his confidence, it's really great that you can put out something like you never have bad third week. So I'm still doubting if who's the one to beat Steven Kruiswijk, actually. I know Nibali is close and he's unpredictable. He can do crazy things, we all know. And I won't say Steven Kruiswijk is going to win the Giro Italia because it's still a hard week to come. But in my opinion, right now, he's the number one favourite, actually.
And what about his team, Lotto NL Jumbo? Are they strong enough to help him?
Well, it was funny. I spoke to Bram Tonk as well after you were finished. And he said, you know, you can have like three guys in the top 20 or in the top 30. But if it gets down and the top guys go out, there are only five or six of them who will be on the front. So what's the point of having three guys in the top 30 if they are not able to follow the best of the best? And that's what will happen in the last weekend as well.
Yeah.
Only the best of the best will be in front.
Yeah, and we talked today during the stage, Lionel and I, about the part that luck plays as well. Because yesterday we said that a lot of teams would send guys out early in the early break to help them. But you can never predict when you do that where they're going to be useful, when they're going to be useful, and whether when they finally come back to the lead group, whether they're going to have energy left to help the leader. And we saw today, you know, Astana, I think it was Andre Zeitz, for a very short period. He was in the break early on and he came back and he was with Nibali and he helped him for maybe, you know, a kilometre or two, 3 kilometres. But it's very difficult to predict.
Well, it's funny you mentioned, because this was the first day Movistar was not able to play any tactical games. And obviously, these sort of stages are not the Movistar stages. So we're going to see what will happen up to next week. But tomorrow, the time trial, is not a Movistar stage. They cannot help each other. They have to fight for themselves. I'm really curious about what will happen the upcoming week. Maybe to get back on the team, because that's what Lionel mentioned just right now. I think this will only give a big push for the team. Don't underestimate, because yesterday, before the last two climbs, there were five of them. And there was this, for example, there was also this guy, Twan Castellanes. You probably never heard of the guy, but this is his first year as a pro, and he was there. You know, so he was there between the Movistar guys, between the Astana guys, and that's what you see happening right now. I already mentioned Martin Cialinghi. He's a sort of the house philosopher of the team. And he said, and it sounds a bit pathetic, but if you give confidence, you get confidence. And if you get confidence, you give confidence. And that's what's happening right now at the Lotto Jumbo
squad.
Wow,
that's profound.
It is profound. And I think we made a kilometre zero on Martin Cialinghi because he was the real kind of star of the opening weekend in the Netherlands. And he talked a lot about the mental strength required for cycling. It's not just about the legs. It's about the head as well. So he strikes me as the ideal road captain to be in that team. And he's been active in these few days. He was off the front getting into moves and stuff yesterday. Strikes me as the kind of the calm, sort of the beating heart of that team.
Yeah. And if you're talking about the head, I really wonder what's going on inside the head of Nibali right now. Remember stage 6, he got a smash by Tom Dumoulin. There was another Dutchie. There was not a counter-attack, there was a counter-attack 2.0. Today, he got another smash by Steven Kruiswijk. There's no question about Nibali being a big star. He's a big star in riding Grand Tours. He won all three of them. But right now it comes down, I guess, on a mental game. He should get it together for tomorrow. That's the first thing he has to do, because otherwise he might as well lose time tomorrow again.
The way you put it, Dan, I'm slightly worried that Sicily is going to declare war on Holland overnight, and we might we might enter into a conflict situation tomorrow. But I was going to just say to Dan, Lionel, that you know, we've been talking for years about the next Dutch Tour winner, the next Dutch Grand Tour star, and the names that have been mentioned have generally been other names. It's been Heysink, it's been Kelderman, it's been Mollema. Is it possible that they've had the future Grand Tour star of Holland under their nose the whole time and it's been Steven Kruiswijk?
Like I said, my pronos are just bad, so I won't say he will win this Grand Tour. I don't go there, but it would be something, you know. I'm already quite surprised by what's happened today, because we don't see that often that Alessandro Valverde, also a big star, for example, has been riding off on 3 minutes, you know. On Dutch perspectives, we should first not celebrate it, but keep this one close to us, and then we will see what will happen. But it would be something if Steven Kruiswijk is the first Grand Tour winner for Holland now since, I guess, it's
Joep Zoetemelk in 1980 at the Tour de France. It's a long, long time. Just before we move on from Steven Kruiswijk, a little bit of trivia. I know Daniel, I mean, I love my patterns, I love my sort of Venn diagrams. There's a beautiful bit of symmetry between the Giro, the Dutch and the Dolomites, because on the day Steven Kruiswijk was born, which was June the 7th, 1987, a Dutch rider called Johan van der Velde won a stage of the Giro not far from here, from Sapada to Kanazai. Now that is... It's almost like it's written in the stars.
That thoroughly. That's the kind of thing I would get wrong. That's the kind of thing, there would be one vital detail that was wrong.
Well, I've checked it thoroughly, so that's absolutely fine. Let's talk about the stage winner, Esteban Chavez, because he was the other star of the day, wasn't he, Daniel?
He was, and we talked about yesterday the altitude factor, didn't we? We talked about the fact that this stage was going over 2,000 metres five times, and Chavez hails from Bogota, which is 2,680 metres, I think. You know, off the top of my head, above sea level. And Chavez talked about this.
Two instances of fact doping in a minute.
Well, Chavez talked about this in his press conference. He said that, well, he pointed out that the rider up the road, the rider who looked as though he was going to win the stage, was Darwin Atapuma, another Colombian. And he comes from a place that's even higher up. Yeah, it's a phenomenon that we've seen grow and develop over the last few years, the re-emergence of Colombians in the mountain stages of the major tours, and it's really impossible to ignore now, isn't it? I mean, I think it's a good generation of Colombian riders, but it's a wider trend, really, than just having more talented riders. I think a lot of infrastructure has gone into, you know, promoting these riders, and, you know, the team that Chavez was a part of, run by Claudio Corti, was one contributor, but the Colombians are really very much at the forefront now, aren't they?
They are, and they're spread across a number of teams as well. That's the other thing. You know, back in the 80s, when the first wave of Colombian riders came over, they all rode for either Postobon or Café de Colombia, the two big Colombian teams that made a splash in the 80s. Now they're, you know, they, well, as we saw today, we had Darwin Atapuma up the road, and we had Esteban Chavez attacking, you know, or chasing Steven Kruiswijk. On Chavez, though, he's a resilient rider, isn't he? I mean, he's come back from a really bad injury of his own a couple of years ago, or three years ago. He crashed in the Trofeo Laguiglia in Italy in February 2013, suffered really bad injuries, and he said in the press conference that several doctors had told him that his broken arm meant that he might not ride at a top level again. And he made quite a nice comment. He said, "Today I raised my arms, you know, almost to prove his point." But what was really interesting was that Kruiswijk said to him when they were in the group, "Shall we go together? Shall we attack together?" And so there was a real, you know, they went in tandem. They're obviously the quieter men of this Giro so far. They've both ridden impeccably. They've not put a foot wrong. They've been calm, they've been in the wheels. They haven't risked anything until today, when they've joined forces and they've gained tremendously.
Indeed, Lionel, and for Chavez, I suppose the same questions apply as with Kruiswijk about the team as well. I mean, Dan has sort of said us right on Lotto Jumbo being a lot stronger than some people maybe give them credit for, but Chavez might find himself in a position where he really needs to rely on his team later in the week, and we haven't seen an awful lot of Orica Green Edge in the mountains, and they really didn't come with a team equipped to support him on for a general classification bid.
Apart from Ruben Plaza, who spent a lot of the early part of the stage, the first half of the stage, out in front on his own.
Actually, on this high altitude thing, I totally agree on with Daniel. But can you explain me what, where does Nuenen, where Steven Kruiswijk is from, and Bogota level? Because it was, they got the same time at the finish line. So, you know.
Well, Dan, Tenerife and the Teide volcano is very high. It's over 2,000 meters, and as we know, Kruiswijk spent a lot of time there.
The Netherlands is like underwater, isn't it? I think it's below sea level a lot of it.
And one more thing, Lionel, about you're really fond of these funny things, and there's another connection between Colombia and a Colombian rider and Holland. You might know Winner Anacona is named after Peter Winner, but his name is spelled wrong because his father gave him the wrong name
when he went to register the birth. Yeah, I have heard that.
He misspelled the name, but I checked the story on Winner, and he's named after Peter Winner.
So I thought he was named after a snake.
Winner Anaconda.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
The sun's gone behind the Dolomites here, and it's feeling a little bit chilly, isn't it, Daniel?
It is, Lionel. It's very chilly.
But it's still warmer than it has been in London. I think it's been raining a bit. Richard Moore, I hope he's been watching the stage, our team captain. Let's hear from Richard, because he is gathering together the nominations for the Pedaleur de Charme Award.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring our daily Pedaleur de Charme Award. And I'm with Orla Shinnewy, friend of the podcast. Hello, Orla.
Hello, Richard.
So we haven't seen much of the Giro today, Orla. We've been at a barbecue, haven't we?
We have been at a barbecue to celebrate your birthday, belatedly. We have been enjoying your venison burgers, a little bit of British rain, and discussing a little bit of our forthcoming project, which has been fun.
Yes, we're launching the cycling podcast Femina in next month. So we've been talking about that a little bit in between the burgers and the rain. But the nominations have been flooding in for Pedaleur de Charme, and we have a winner for today. Would you like to announce the winner of today's Pedaleur de Charme contest? He'll get his t-shirt tomorrow.
I will indeed. So today's winner could be taken as a bit of a play on words with Pedaleur de Charme, if you're to pronounce it a certain way. Guesses, yes. It's George Pridler de Charme, but I've been learning German, so for all of you, Daniel Freib included, he'll probably try to get the pronunciation right. It's actually pronounced Georg Pridler. So it's Georg Pridler is today's Pridler de Charme.
So Orla Shinnewy has set me straight there on the pronunciation of Georg Pridler.
Correct.
Pronunciations all over the shop today, but I've been out in the sun a lot. I think I might have a touch of sunstroke. Brain's feeling a bit addled. Oh, excuses.
We had a long old walk up to the bus. We had a bit of an errand to run, didn't we?
We did.
Up at the team buses later, and there was the climb to the buses was probably the hardest climb on the stage, because it was it was one kilometre at about 30% to get to the team buses.
It was. So there we are. That's today's Pedaleur de Charme, as nominated by Richard. At the finish, Daniel actually spoke to Pridler.
Well, let's first say, Lionel, that Georg Pridler is studying mining engineering. He does that part-time, and the rest of his time he spends riding for Giant Albertsen. So, very versatile chap. And you had to feel sorry for him, really, because he was the last surviving member of that initial break. Looked extremely good right up until the last corner, really, and as we'll hear, he thought he still had a chance even as they came under the kilometre kite.
A great day for you, but in the end a heartbreaking one, I suppose.
Yeah, in the end I go home with empty hands. A little bit disappointing, but I could also show my level, and it's good, and I'm the only guy out of those 36 who could hang on till the end, so it's also nice.
Did you dare to dream then, when you did get back on and you came around the final corner, still in contact, did you think you might pull it off?
Yeah, when we went on the last 1K, I actually thought, yeah, okay, I'm going to pull it off. But it was so close. And yeah, those two guys are really strong now.
But in spite of that, it looks as though you're getting stronger and stronger in this Giro. Is this a real breakthrough for you, this Giro d'Italia? It seems that way.
Yeah, I went here with a good level, and I'm really happy that I can show my legs, like how good they are. And I think the last 2 years, I was also 2 years ago I did the Giro also. I was also on a good level. I really love this race. So far, I didn't get lucky, but I hope it will come.
More opportunities between now and Turin. Are you going to give it another go?
Yeah, I'm going to try in the last week for sure. But now I'm going to take a few days easy. and then we'll see.
So the other big story of the day, Daniel, is Movistar's implosion, really. They had the pink jersey with Andre Amador. They had Alejandro Valverde beautifully poised just behind Nibali this morning. And when the gas was turned on, they went backwards. And you made the point earlier on when we were watching on TV just how quickly that gap opened and just how legless Valverde looked.
Yeah, it was difficult to tell whether Valverde had, well, he hadn't bonked, I don't think, but whether he'd completely collapsed or whether it was Kreuzweg and Chavez who had just gone extremely quickly. I would suggest the latter, because there were other riders with Valverde who also lost, obviously, the same amount of time. So they can't all have fallen into a deep crisis at exactly the same moment. So, I mean, worrying for Valverde, because we know there are a lot of climbs still to come in this Giro, a lot of long climbs, a lot of steep climbs. You look at tomorrow, uphill time trial, I'm sure he'll do okay, but it's not his speciality. There are riders who I would expect to do better than him tomorrow. And really, you know, all of the positioning and sort of preparation for these mountain stages that Movistar have done by, you know, getting Amador in such a good position on GC, it really is in danger of coming to nothing, because now they find themselves needing to attack, really.
Yeah, and really, they've been so good for the less important days, and then they've really gone backwards on the first serious day, where big time can be lost in a short space of time. 3 minutes to ship 3 minutes. I mean, it's not Giro ending, is it? Because, you know, he's still in the mix. He's still fourth overall, and he's only got three riders to overtake. You could argue that Kreuzweg and Chavez, inexperienced, might falter, but it's a lot of time to make up. Dan, what was your reading of Movistar's riding today?
Well, let's first of all point out that two guys on 3 minutes is still a dangerous position for the guys above them. But on Amador, for example, I spoke to Davide Bramati yesterday, and it's been clear last week they wanted him in pink earlier. They tried before. So even that plan was crossed-passed, you say it's pronounced like this, by the good riding of Bob Jungels, for example. You know, so we've seen that the new kids in town, Tom Dumoulin on first week and Bob Jungels on second week, actually gave the big teams, like Astana and Movistar, hard times in the first 2 weeks. And till now, they only have one day in pink, and I guess not even a stage win. So if they go out like this, well, it's up to you guys. You make the house, should I say it. You give the points, but that would not be something to be happy to return with to Spain.
And I think it's interesting, well, to remember the stages that we've got to come in the final weekend. You look at the stages that really everyone has focused on, the stages that come at the end of next week, the big mountain stages, and you just wonder how much Movistar will be able to do there, because the hierarchy has really been established today in the mountains, and we've seen how good everyone is at the current moment at climbing. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Movistar identify a different day, and I'm thinking particularly about the stage to Andalo, which is a more sort of mixed day, a medium mountain day, as the place where they try to really upset the apple cart.
But I mean, Valverde, we don't often see him collapse like that, do we? He's so consistent. He's normally always there. He normally is the one that's kind of waiting, and then he makes his little gains right at the end. And when the pace went on, he just couldn't follow.
I can only remember one day, and I don't know exactly which Tour de France it was. I guess 3 years ago, but that was the Echelon stage. And that was the only time I saw Valverde break like this. But uphill, there's always been a plan, you know, with guys in front. And today he was just actually on his own, because Amador was of no help.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast while we are at the Giro d'Italia. Science in Sport are offering 20% off all of their products. That's energy bars, drinks, gels, whatever else they're selling on the Science in Sport website, which is scienceinsport.com. 20% off if you enter the code SIS20, SIS20 at checkout. So if that's something that you could make use of, check out the website. enter the code and wait for your stuff to arrive in the post. Right, we haven't really talked about Astana and Vincenzo Nibali, Daniel. Nibali was good today, but he wasn't super, was he?
No, he wasn't. And he attacked on the Valparola and didn't do the damage that he obviously hoped or expected to do, and then found himself chasing Chavez and Kreuzwick, and looked at one point as though he might get back on. He obviously uses all of his descending skills on the way down the Valparola to try and catch those two. Didn't manage to do it, and found himself in no man's land, really, isolated behind the leaders. I think he will be relatively happy with his form, and he certainly suggested this evening that, you know, he felt as though he performed okay, but he'll be alarmed by how much better than him Chavez and Kreuzwick were, and surprised, I imagine, because, as we've said, I think, before tonight, these are not riders who have really been in the kind of inner sanctum of the very top GC contenders, and you would have expected Nibali to be slightly a class above those guys.
Yeah, Daniel, I mean, you were talking today about how consistently good Nibali is in the Grand Tours. An amazing record, really. 14 or 15 Grand Tour finishes, only one where he's not finished, and that was when he was disqualified from the Vuelta last year for hanging onto a car. I've made the joke that Nibali's kind of like a sort of back garden firework on bonfire night. He's ridden like a Roman candle, he's ridden like a Catherine wheel. Today he rode a bit like one of those fireworks that doesn't ignite properly, and you're worried that, you know, dad's going to go and revisit the firework and try and relight it, and it might go off in your face.
I'm a bit worried that you're a pyromaniac. I don't know this much about fireworks.
Well, it maybe indicates, you know, the sort of upbringing I had. We had our own back garden fireworks on bonfire night. But he tried and it didn't work for him. But if you just said you'll be 41 seconds off the pink jersey at this point, behind a rider who's not proven at the top level, he would have taken that at this point. But of course, he's got the knowledge of how his legs feel and whether he's able to be explosive enough to make the time gains that he needs to make. Or is he relying on Kreuzwick and Chavez and others to falter and kind of leave him to sail through the middle unchallenged?
I think he'd be entitled to expect them to falter because, as I said before, their pedigree in Grand Tours doesn't suggest that they're capable of winning Grand Tours. I mean, they might have made great strides this year. Kreuzwick said tonight that he didn't think he was any better than previous years, which was interesting because that suggested that the field has gone back towards him and the level at this Giro isn't very high. I'm not sure whether that's true or not. But tomorrow we've got the Alpe di Chiusi mountain time trial, and on paper, I would expect Nibali to be the strongest of the overall contenders there. But, you know, we were chatting to Dave Brailsford today of Team Sky, and he said to look out for Esteban Chavez tomorrow because he expects a really good performance from Chavez, and Brailsford's not alone in that respect.
Well, just a little plug for another Kilometre Zero. It's time trial day tomorrow. On the last time trial day in Chianti, I spent the day with the Orica GreenEdge team, Esteban Chavez's team, of course, and that's a bit of an insight into the logistics that go on time trial day. Give that a listen if you are interested in that kind of thing.
And also another Kilometre Zero on the Dolomites, of course. Tomorrow we are still in the Dolomites, Lionel.
We certainly are. I say that with total confidence.
Despite the fact that it's Alpe di Chiusi.
It's the one that catches you out, isn't it?
It doesn't catch me out. It might catch you out. Finally, on Nibali, I would say that his team are still cautiously optimistic. And actually, at the finish today in Cordovada, I spoke to Jakob Fuglsang about Nibali's performance today and what they were hoping for and expecting over the next few days.
A difficult day for Vincenzo, but he's limited his losses.
I think it was a difficult day for everybody. Yeah, he limits the losses, and that's the most important. The Giro is still long, and he seems to be going better and better day by day, so hopefully he will continue like that. And that's the most important. He was not far away today, but I think we also saw that Travis and Kreuzwick are the two main guys to beat. They both seem like they're really strong, and especially Chavez.
Was that a surprise to you how strong they were? I mean, they've never been quite at this level in Grand Tours before.
Kreuzwick, he did good last year, and he has been hiding under the radar the last few days, and then also Chavez have been looking really, really easy on the climbs. I think it's not a big surprise in the end, but of course it would be nice if we were better than them.
Dan, what's your reading of Vincenzo Nibali and where he stands at the moment and how he's riding? Should he be happy or should he be slightly concerned?
He probably is slightly concerned, but that's what brings out the best in Nibali most of the times. I remember last year's Tour de France when he won the stage. He showed he's a champion. He just wants the win. And even if there is discussion afterwards with Froome, for example, about mechanics, and these sort of things don't bother Nibali, you know. He's here to win, and he's here still to win. It's 41 seconds. If we keep quiet for 41 seconds, nobody turns off the radio tonight, you know. They will be back after 41 seconds for the cycling podcast. So it's still nothing.
We try not to have gaps of 41 seconds in the podcast. I mean, sometimes there are gremlins get into the machines, but we tend not to do that.
It was interesting commenting on Nibali's sprint yesterday, which took a lot of people by surprise, including Alejandro Valverde, who wasn't aware yesterday that there were bonus seconds available. And Nibali beat Valverde in the sprint, which would be considered unusual. However, Beppe Martinelli, the DS, the director sportivo of Astana, commenting on that, said, well, he was just practicing for Turin because we're going to need to sprint in Turin as well, because the Giro is going to be that close. And who knows, that might prove to be the case.
Sapevo fin troppo bene che nel mondo del ciclismo un corridore innamorato pazzo era considerato inaffidabile. Per correre bene bisogna avere la testa sgombra, come accade solo a chi ha una situazione sentimentale stabile o non ce l'ha proprio. I knew that in the cycling world, a rider who's crazy in love is considered untrustworthy. To race well, your thoughts have to be clear, as can only be the case when one's romantic life is under control or when one doesn't have a romantic life.
Well, more saucy stuff.
I've given up trying to find anything else, Lionel. I'm going straight to the pages that would not look out of place in a Mills and Boone novel.
Or Lady Chatterley's Lover, I'm starting to think. Yeah, this is remarkable stuff. Anyway, it's getting chilly in the Dolomites. We've got one more day in the Dolomites, a time trial on Sunday, and then I haven't announced this to the press yet, but I'm actually going home after tomorrow. 2 weeks of the Giro is perfectly enough for me.
Got the Buffalo coming back, haven't we? Our great leader, Richard Moore.
You have, yeah. Enjoy your final week with the Buffalo. So one more for me to do. Looking forward to the time trial. I don't normally like time trials, but uphill time trials, I think, you know, there's going to be really interesting to see who's good, who's bad, whether anyone can gain any time back.
They are great when we've got the GC set up as the GC is set up at the moment. They are terrible at the back end of a stage race, which has already been more or less decided. Tomorrow, however, I think will be fascinating.
So that's all from us this evening. Thank you very much, Dan Hackenberg.
I appreciate it.
And thank you, Daniel.
Very polite, isn't he? We should get more Dutchmen on. They are extremely courteous.
And their English is better than ours.